schools as much as anything else, really. You know, the health profession is another one where perfectionism is the minimum standard almost. And perfectionism is a feeder of shame. You know, it's a shame response, and it's at the core of how, you know, these really important pillars of our society operate. You know, and we've got over in the UK, you know, burnt out heads of schools terrified of making a mistake. It's how do you just that disconnect, that difference. It's a really, I don't know, I don't even have the word, the language to really kind of express myself in terms of how big it is for me to even sort of, it's that example again of sort of what I mentioned earlier. It's almost so big it becomes overwhelming, and you think, oh my God, what are we going to do about this? And it's like, we do exactly what you described, Hannah, and what I'm doing over here, and no doubt what you're doing, Josh. We do what we can in our local environment and hope that ripple effect will create change on a bigger scale. And I think that's the only way I can ground myself with this stuff. Because, you know, wouldn't it be a beautiful world if what we were taught at school is to, well, how do we become a human being?
Welcome to the Deeper Awareness Podcast, where we delve into the depths of our inner selves, uncovering authenticity and transformation. Join us for enlightening conversations on breathwork, self-discovery, and the profound journey within. I'm your host, Josh Perry, joined by the delightful Hannah Oxley. Let's begin.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Deeper Awareness Podcast. I'm Hannah, and today Josh and I got to sit down with Nick Edgar, a transformational coach who Josh met him through a program called Inner You, hosted by Josh Conley in the UK. And the way Nick tells his story, even if it's a completely different story from yours, it's such a relatable experience to listen to. Just his storytelling in general, and how passionate he is about how storytelling and sharing with people has created such a connection that we all need, and which is why he was the perfect guest for our podcast here. We talk about people pleasing a lot. He mentions how those are the people he ends up helping the most. And so as a recovering people pleaser, I got so much out of this conversation, and I hope you do too. Take a listen.
So, Nick, if you'll just take a moment and just introduce yourself, I can share my experience. I like to just kind of personalize it that way. So, Josh Connolly leads a program called Inner You, which is an inner child 6-week program with breath work. And so this will be my third round that I'm going through it. And so that's where I first saw Nick. I don't know that we've really had any interaction other than in those Zoom rooms, you know, nothing real, I guess, behind the scenes, nothing. So it's exciting just to have you and to get to know you. And so, yeah, if you can just take a little bit and just introduce you to our listeners.
Yeah, that'd be a pleasure, Josh. Yeah, that is where we met, and I've had the privilege and pleasure of working with Josh for about 18 months now. But I am kind of one half of a holistic wellness business called the 3E Space. The 3 E's being explore, energize, and empower. And that's kind of the energy that myself and my partner Jess bring to everything that we do in and out of business. So I am a transformational life coach, and I'm also qualified and accredited in neuro-linguistic programming, in hypnotherapy and breathwork. And I'm also qualified in counseling skills, but I'm not a qualified psychotherapist. And I kind of bring the best of all of those modalities into, firstly, holding space for people to be witnessed in their experience. And I take a person-centered approach to meet them where they are, whether that's an individual or in a group setting. And we get curious. We get curious about what's going on for them, what their truth is, who they are. And through a process of kind of peeling back various layers of truth, much of which has kind of grown, some of it intentionally, some of it subconsciously over a number of years, we kind of get to the real, who are they authentically? And the reason they come to work with me is mostly because they've just noticed a disconnect between what's going on inside them and what's happening out there and who they are out in the world. And really what I try and do is just facilitate them to bring them back into harmony in ways that are meaningful to them. So hopefully that makes a bit of sense about who I am and what I do in the now.
Absolutely. I love the way you explain that, because it is, that's what anybody in this realm of work is doing. It's just peeling back those layers to uncover the truth of who they are. I love that.
I think my main kind of, it is a passion, absolutely, is to work with people pleasers. I'm a recovering people pleaser myself. and I think that it's more common than maybe people are aware. So I kind of try and highlight some common reasons why perhaps we become people pleasers. How does it show up? And sometimes it can be a little confronting when we really get to the truth of who we are in the now and why we became a people pleaser. And the term itself almost can be a little bit confusing, I find. So maybe we'll have an opportunity to explore that as we carry on in this conversation. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I'd love to get into that too, because so many, I mean, it's just so many out there, people pleasers. I feel so strongly that it's generational. We just learn to keep those manners from my mother to my grandmother. And even when my grandmother is no longer on this earth, but I feel her with me all the time and in like a different presence. But like, I think of her, like her physical form, whenever I do something, I'm like, oh, would my grandmother approve of that kind of thing? But now that I know her, she's with me, I can feel that more authentic energy of like, you have to do what you have to do, what's best for you. And, you know, stop trying to please everyone, because I know how exhausted she would be. But yeah, so that generational curse of that is hard to break. So it's about going inward, but also trusting that what your work is doing is also healing generations behind and in front of you.
Yeah, I love that, Hannah. There's a real sense of it. I like the term kind of cycle breakers in response to, it's an internal family systems saying, the legacy burdens, which we all carry genealogically.
Mm. I did one of those family, yeah, it was a constellation or something, family constellations. Mm. That was so powerful, so powerful. But I think we can start with that about, so when did you realize you were a people pleaser, and like when did you want to make a change?
Wow. God, was there a moment? There was probably a series of moments, but I think, and actually I've probably wanted to make, there's been a few key moments of change, I think. God. I think I would begin probably by saying, why did I become a people pleaser in the first place, over and above what we've already touched on? I think if I think about my narrative of growing up in the 1970s and 80s, it still feels like only a couple of decades ago, but it really isn't. but that point notwithstanding, I think I was brought up in a faith household. And I think that that had some really good points to it, like in terms of understanding what having faith feels like. But I think it also brought some challenges in terms of my experience of what it meant to be a member of that particular faith. I think the second thing which was really impactful for me was that my father was a primary school teacher and taught at the school that I went to. And what I perceived as a prepubescent boy was a figure at work who was incredibly charismatic and funny and full of joy, great teacher. But what I experienced at home very often was a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, a lot of tiredness, burnout. And what that kind of taught me subconsciously was that we hide who we really are at home, and we put on masks to behave how we're expected to behave outside. And I think the church kind of backed that up. And then the third really impactful thing for me was round about the time I was going to leave primary school and kind of break free of that influence of my dad. My talent for football, as you guys call it, soccer, came to the fore. And then for the next 9 years throughout adolescence and into my period as a young man, I was on that high performance trajectory towards professional sports, where who I was and that kind of more natural progression of discovery was kind of put to one side in favor of, again, this is how who you need to be, and this is what you need to do, and this is how you have to behave if you want to succeed. And I found all three of those things really, those experiences really challenging throughout really my whole formative years. And what was probably the most challenging was I didn't feel held and seen in my experience to be able to even ask questions. Sort of from a church environment, it was very kind of, my experience of that was very kind of right and wrong, good and bad. And I think throughout football as well, there was no room for me as an individual. It was all about the team and having to kind of be submissive and put them before me. So I think by the time I kind of fell out of that progression at 19, I didn't really know who I was, despite having kind of, you know, been reasonably successful. I'd represented my country as a young person and been in professional teams. I couldn't stay in that environment anymore. So there was a temporary relief of walking away from it, but then I was left with a void of not knowing who I was. And that began to play out throughout my 20s and various kind of nefarious behaviors to numb out from this dilemma and this void of who am I? Why am I here? Why am I feeling this pain? And I didn't know what to do with any of that. And really, that was the struggle I had for the next kind of two decades, even though there were moments of clarity where I sought, first of all, talking therapies. And I got some benefit from that, without a doubt. The first time I ever really opened up and told anyone what was going on in here safely was when I was 27 years old. And that was a big experience. But as much as that gave me initially, I also kind of felt like I would make myself feel better in those environments, only then over a period of years to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. And the cycle of people pleasing, as I look back now, was really about kind of wanting to be liked, seeking love, acceptance, friendship, progression in the workplace, all of these things which we all need, we're all driven to find. But I never gave a second thought as to how I was finding that and what energy I was bringing to it, and the lack of authenticity about achieving those really important things. So this kind of battle of behavior out in the world and pain inside and ways of dealing with that, just, it was unsustainable. So there were a couple of times, firstly, sort of, in my late 20s, when I just shut down, disassociated, and fell into what in a clinical sense would be called anxiety depression. And that was the way it kind of went for me. I'd go into those therapeutic models and lift myself up again, but go back into the world and keep making the same mistakes. Until, I suppose, if there was a point, it was probably about 12 years ago when I found myself in my third or fourth therapist's office, kind of going through the process of explaining my story, which I would have explained very differently to how I've explained it now. Because it was very much from a victim perspective back then of, you know, I do all this stuff and everybody lets me down eventually.
Right.
And that's why I have this pain, you know, and it's, I didn't take any responsibility for my own experience. And while some of the things at the start of the story we spoke about, my childhood, things like that, none of that I could have possibly been responsible for. As an adult, it is absolutely my responsibility in terms of my behavior, how that affects other people and how I show up in the world. And I think that is what, for me, best describes the work to bridge that gap. So hopefully that's kind of enough detail, but succinctly enough for you guys to kind of understand sort of who I am and how I got to that point 12 years ago, that lowest point. But I think that the therapist kind of listened to me in that example of me regaling, you know, partnerships, you know, romantic interests, jobs, friendship groups, where it had been this cycle of kind of connecting, feeling a bit of a victim, and then me just kind of leaving or walking away to start again somewhere else. And the one thing, this therapist was amazing. They listened to me for 90% of the session and then kind of held me in my experience and then came back to me and said, can I just reflect one thing? And I said, yes. And they said, I absolutely feel all of the emotions that you've just expressed here. I want to honor that. But I also want to ask you a simple question. What's the one common denominator in all of these experiences by that stage over the last like 25 years of your adult life? And I sat there and I thought for a minute, and then it just kind of hit me like a wave. And the only common denominator really was me. And I think that was the moment when it was like, okay, I need to really, really look at myself here, my responsibility and all of this. And I think that was probably the moment where everything pivoted and I began to open myself up to things which up until that point, I probably felt were too far away from me. So things like hypnotherapy, breath work, meditation, where previously as a kind of, you know, average Joe kind of guy, I felt like I'm here and all that stuff is way over there. And it's too far for me to leave where I am to get over there to even begin to explore that. So having opened myself up to that, I actually found that that gap is, well, there is no gap if I open myself up to it. And that's really where I've been in the last sort of 12 years, just exploring my own experience, healing, growing, understanding my people pleasing, my responsibility in it, working with the younger versions of myself to let them know we're okay now. We don't have to cope in the way we did when we were young. And that kind of, that part of the journey brings us to sort of connecting with Josh and this whole thing about accessibility and bringing these modalities and this work to meet people where they are, rather than asking them in distress to journey somewhere else to potentially get benefits and healing from it. I can talk about stuff for ages. So yes.
It was so beautifully said. I love how it's like, because my story is so similar, but so different. And I feel like everyone has just the way you explained it all is like, just the feeling that we all go through is so similar. So similar, and the realizations that come afterwards. Yeah, thank you for sharing all of that.
No, you're welcome. It's a pleasure. I think it's Brené Brown that says, like, when we can share openly and vulnerably and feel held in our experience. And I love the way, and I really want to celebrate and thank you both for just allowing me the space to talk a little bit about my story. I think that's where genuine connection happens.
I agree. That I always say it, the authenticity. It's contagious. And I think it has healing power. And if we spread that authenticity, I that's the world I want to live in.
100%. And I think that's it's interesting that you said that, Hannah, because very often we can kind of zoom out almost from our own existence and look at the world. And especially if you're kind of a sensitive and highly sensitive person like I am, and you can almost feel overwhelmed by all of the really troubling things that are happening and almost feel powerless in your own experience. But it's possible to flip that narrative and actually say, what's right in front of me? How can I show up for myself and with the people in my life? And what effect will that have? And that's one of the things that I think we all have the power within us to do. We're all important. We're all enough as we are. And if we can find the courage within ourselves to explore who that is and share that with other people, I genuinely do feel amazing things can happen.
I agree. There's so much power in that.
And you've seen some of that, Josh, haven't you, within Inner You, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking about that last therapist that you mentioned and how there were two pieces of, I guess, what he did. And that first piece was that acknowledgement, that validation. And then that it was also the accountability piece. But you needed both. And if he would have reversed the order of those two, it might have gone way differently. Like that, those walls then come up, right? There's no safety now. It's the, I wasn't heard. And so I feel like that piece is so vital to what our society needs. Like there's so much room for people that have been victimized, but that don't actually want to stay in that space, but just haven't been heard.
And also don't know that there's a different way.
Yeah, I think that's the thing I reflect on often. And I do genuinely feel blessed that, you know, I turned 50 this year, but I genuinely feel like my life is just beginning. And it wasn't that long ago when I thought, I'm not sure I even want to be here anymore. Well, I did think that I don't want to be here anymore because there was a hopelessness to my existence. So I absolutely agree with the power of being witnessed and held in our own experience. And I think that's what I was referring to when I said I take the best from those experiences as a client and then starting on the road to becoming a therapist myself. I saw the power in that. But as you were saying, Josh, the first bit's great, but without the second bit, without that kind of stimulus, if you like. So if you were to just take a purely person-centered Carl Rogers approach, this is just my personal opinion, forever, well, how can we evolve beyond where we are and what exists within us? You know, I think we need that interaction. We need those curious questions and we need that ability for somebody in a safe way to ask us things which could potentially be confronting. But I think because you've created that safety, it just isn't. Mm-hmm. And I think actually the only thing I'd add to that is that it's not a leading question either, really. It's simply a question where, you know, I could have answered, well, I don't know. And that may have been my experience. I just happened to have that moment. And that would be okay too.
Yeah, I think this idea of safety, and Hannah and I have talked a lot on different episodes about safety. And because for me, a year ago, 18 months ago, if someone would have asked me about safety, that it would have come back a does not compute. I don't know what you're asking.
It'd be like safety goggles.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a lot of times my intention just interacting with friends and family is to try to create so much safety in our relationships and in our interaction that it's no longer that we have to go into a therapist's room to feel that, but it's societal now. It's our new normal.
I think one of the things that I've done myself and continue to do and certainly do with the people that I work with is to try and slow down and get curious about what that stress response experience actually is. Because often we go from stress moment, trigger if that language resonates, to behavior and reaction in the blink of an eye. And I think societally, that's happening more and more and more and more. And I think social media kind of, not in general terms, but I think the culture, the unplanned culture of social media, I think has been that because you don't have those societal norms of being face to face and in a situation, I think there is a freedom, if, but I don't think that's the right word, but there's an opportunity for that to just become normalized. I'm reading this, I feel this, I respond, I comment, I, you know, and its worst end of that is kind of trolling. And I see that coming into the world as well. So for me, the biggest skill I think any of us can learn is to actually actively listen and to be able to notice when something within us is getting in the way of that, and to actually kind of just be aware of it, but bring ourselves back to why we're there and to be able to listen to what a person is really trying to say to us, and not assume that what we are understanding that they're saying is actually what they mean. So for me, for example, when I first started to open up, and especially with people that are new to this, very often it's not the first thing we say which is actually the truth. There's almost a blockage to open our mouth in the first place, and then we kind of start to talk, but it's very rare we get right to the heart of the matter straight away. We almost have to kind of set ourselves up to reach that point of where a truth can be revealed. Now, if we're kind of reacting to the first thing that somebody starts to say to us, and we already start formulating what our response is going to be and trying to make sense of what they're saying, it's possible they may never get to that sharing of truth. So there are various kind of stages to this process. And I totally agree. If there's one thing the world that where we could take a kind of jump together would be if we could all learn to kind of actively listen and develop those skills.
One big thing that shifted for me when I started doing this work was just the idea of witnessing yourself and all of the players going on. And so it's still so easy for me to get caught up in something someone says, but just to remind, if I can, remind myself to just remove, just, you know, zoom out from the situation and just kind of see it from that witness perspective. And that you takes it needs safety before that. You need to feel safe that you can look from above. So I think those are two huge things on that, on the beginning of that inner work journey.
Yeah, I always say that when we embark on developing our self-awareness, we find ourselves at a junction where the kind of the road which is almost kind of enticing us down there is then self-judgment. And the other more concealed, harder to kind of see road is self-compassion. And I think that's why for me, self-compassion combined with self-awareness is so important. Because the self-awareness without the other can sometimes be more damaging, especially if we are prone to talk to ourselves in a really unkind way. And I certainly know that's, you know, for two decades, that's what I did as a people pleaser.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause when as a people pleaser, you're just looking for that love and acceptance, like you said, but when you realize that you can give yourself that love and acceptance just by witnessing with that loving awareness, like that's the empowerment piece, I think, that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is why I kind of practices like breath work are really important to me, because they can create emotional space to make sense of things that have happened to us, and to release those emotions. But I don't cognitively have to understand necessarily what's happened in a way that some of the other work requires that engagement. And say NLP or hypnotherapy, again, I think is a really important piece of this puzzle, because, you know, by the time we become adults, especially when we become 30 plus, you know, I think 95% of our thoughts are regurgitated, and about 80% of those are negative in your average person. That's quite the odds to have to make these shifts when you recognize yourself to be a people pleaser, or for that matter, any other behavior that you become self-aware of that you want to change, because we become almost programmed to repeat those behaviors because there's a certain comfort in it, even if alongside that comfort, we feel pain. And I think that's for me what people pleasing was like. And in the early days of trying to break free from it, I had the awareness that that's what I was doing. But in the moment of interaction with other human beings, I just reverted to type. It was the same experience on reflection as being a tobacco smoker for so many years, that I'm going to quit cigarettes. They're bad for me. I cognitively know I don't want to do this anymore. And then 15 minutes later, I'd be lighting up because of this itch inside me that needed scratching. And people pleasing was very, very similar somatically for me and spiritually for me. So I think learning tools where we can work with our subconscious, as well as tools where we can unconsciously move things around and create space, as well as conscious work, allows us to kind of work with ourselves in all the ways that make us gloriously human. And maybe only doing one of those only gives us kind of part of that possibility.
Yeah, it's interesting, Nick. My path was very similar. So I went through a year-long hypnotherapy training online, and then I dove into NLP, and I was like, okay, hypnosis is good, but NLP is this has got to be the answer. And so I dove into NLP, and I was practicing on myself because I was my first, that was the reason I was going down this path. And so I was learning NLP, I was practicing, I went flew out to San Diego and got certified, and I was like doing all the parts integration and practicing all these things, and I was like, why do I still feel like shit? Like, what is going on? I have better thoughts, I'm catching my thoughts quicker, but inside I just didn't like myself. And my brain and my body were there was a disconnect. And so this was my journey to breath work. And so as I was doing breath work, I kind of set those other things aside. And I love that you've collected them as modalities that you still work with, instead of, because it feels like I was on to the next thing and I was disregarding. I was like, that's junk, let's get rid of that. And then I found this new thing, and it had to be the answer. And then, so with breath work, I kept finding all of this grief and anger and hate and resentment inside my body that hypnosis hadn't touched. There was no, well, hypnosis isn't designed to even locate that and find it. And so I'd love to hear how you've brought all of these things together, instead of my theory of chucking it as no good. So.
Yeah, look, I think, and maybe this is something which actually came out of the first thing out of my upbringing, especially in relation to the church and faith, because the version of faith I grew up with was very much about doctrine and right and wrong, and this is the way. And when I had curious questions about that, or I said, well, this kind of works for me, and I feel this, but I'm not feeling this in the same way. Why is that? Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, because you're a sinner and da 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 da, and you have all of those kind of like conversations if you're lucky. And very often I didn't get to have those. But I think what I've come to learn is that faith in ourselves, faith in each other, faith in the universe, whatever, and all of those things is about who am I? And even though we're all connected, we're also individual beings. And what's right for me isn't necessarily going to be right for you, Josh, or you, Hannah. And that's okay. That doesn't invalidate something that's right for me that isn't right for the both of you. And I think taking that approach to my exploration of religion. So when I did fall out of professional football, I took a degree in theology. I wanted to understand all the religion. It's like, what is the truth? What is the goal? It's not that. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not Hinduism. It's not, Islam. It's not this. It's not this. But hang on, there are also these common threads here. That's weird. Wonder what that means. And just kind of, do you know what I mean? Kind of like, I think what it's that flipping of a narrative of there is must be a way to. There's infinite number of ways, but the question isn't what is the way? The question is what is the way for me? And I think what I've tried to do in learning all these tools, which I'm still continuing to learn, is to offer up a toolbox to meet someone where they are, and they can take whatever lands and make it their own and go where they need to go with it. And they can let go what doesn't land. And I think that's based on my lived experience. I think how I've been able to more successfully deal with my own experiences, and to accept others as I find them, and to not worry about where there's difference. I hope that explains that.
So when you take on a client, what is, can you step us through, like, how do you decide? Is it intuitively, or is it, what does that look like?
Well, I prefer, well, generally speaking, people that want to work with me don't find me in a directory or, in one of 50 potential coaches that they could work with. Generally, they've come across me in some way, shape, or form. So whether that's through a slow burning relationship developed over a period of time on social media, they may have come to a live event, they may have been on an EU. And I find that you can kind of get to know people and they can get to know you a little bit by having a taster of an experience of you and vice versa. Because I'm not interested in working with somebody for my sake and their sake in that kind of cold way, because you've got so much work to do and a finite amount of time to do it, that if you spend that initial period getting to know each other from scratch, I don't think it's a reasonable investment on their part to make in themselves and me as their coach and their practitioner. So I think it tends to be a kind of softer in. I for private clients, I lead with people pleasing because I am a recovering people pleaser, and that mantra of try and be the person that you needed yourself guides me, in and amongst everything that we've already spoken about. But I really kind of try and take it back to basics in those early kind of sessions, looking at things like values. What are my values? And what are my values in all the areas of my life? And are these values actually mine, or are they inherited? And how can I get curious about knowing the difference? And how does that make me feel? And what am I going to do with these emotions? With the knowledge I'm gaining. And it's a real process about of self-discovery. Ultimately, I think it's a journey towards, I use the phrase reclaiming your voice, reclaiming yourself. I think it's being able to connect together through that journey guided by the client of what's happening within them, and to offer opportunities for them to go deeper. And to explore that in ways that are meaningful to them to get the answers that they need to be able to move forward in a more connected, congruent fashion. And in a sort of, I generally work with clients for sort of a 4 month period minimum, usually not longer than six. I feel that that is enough to be able to, for someone to say, I've recognized I'm people pleasing, or I'm feeling inauthentic in the world, whatever language they're using. I did this breath work and it was amazing. Or, I've done one of your free hypnotherapies, whatever it is. And I'm really curious to get to that point of, I know enough about myself now, and I've got enough tools so that I can now move forward and self-coach myself through what comes next. Not for a second would I say, you will never need any support ever again. You will never struggle ever again. You will not have new challenges and new discoveries to face and discover about yourself. But I think it's that transformational shift towards authenticity, a real deep authenticity that once you find it, I don't think you ever really lose it. Does that make sense?
That's so beautiful. Yeah. I feel like that authenticity was something I didn't know I didn't have it. We want to assume or think that we're authentic, but the more self-discovery I've had, that was the deeper awareness for me, that it was like, oh, I actually don't know what my values are, or I don't know where they came from. And who gave me these beliefs? Do I want these anymore? Are they serving me? Are they creating like a conflict inside of me?
And it's very often it is. It's the beliefs that form from our values. And it's being able to kind of search through that murkiness to find out, well, what are the authentic beliefs I'm already living? If you can identify those, but what are the limiting beliefs which are holding me back and keeping me in this cycle? And that's why I refer to the more kind of subconscious and unconscious work, because making those changes consciously is so difficult. When you've been behaving in certain patterns for such a long period of time, you know, we have to be gentle with ourselves through that transformational process. We have to accept that we'll fail when we try and make those changes. But that isn't the same as telling ourselves, I am a failure. And I think one of the biggest emotions that comes up to, there are two really, but it's guilt and shame. It's the stuff that we shove into the darkness and we hope no one ever sees about us, because we fear that we will be unlovable if people find these things out about us. And ironically, it's very often the bringing of these things into the light, having compassion for themselves and then sharing them with other people, that creates those deepest of connections.
I agree.
It's fascinating. One of my heroes is, and a far better authority than me on this subject, is Brené Brown. For me, I think she's amazing. The way she talks about guilt and shame and Atlas of the Heart is one of my favorite books of recent times. You know, I definitely recommend it as a way to kind of begin to navigate your emotional experiences. And my first is my trusty tool, the Emotions Wheel.
Oh, cool.
Which, even now, we often talk about our emotions in very core ways. I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm afraid. But look at the nuance and the difference of human experience that sits around it. And I feel that when we can develop that first of all, intelligence up here, but then agility and awareness of how our emotions show up in our body in different ways, we can really begin to understand our experience in a much richer, deeper fashion, which then allows us to kind of make more sense of it, rather than I'm just angry all the time. Well, okay, there's 26 or 28 emotions that sit under anger. Let's explore that. You know, and that's a lot of the deeper work that I do with my clients, and that in itself can allow you to split up what feels like and just so big and so powerful into composite parts and situations, and to work with those in a much more manageable way.
I want that wheel.
I know. Yeah, for those listening and not watching, Nick just showed us this beautiful color wheel of all of emotions, and it's really fascinating. And I love how worn it is. You use it all the time, I see.
Yes, it gets a lot of use. And it is. It's really, you know, me and Jess refer to this. So Jess, my partner. And, you know, when we're not understanding each other, just coming back to this tool and allowing us to explore the emotions that we're feeling can allow us again to reconnect. And we found that sort of, God, so it can be so easy in any human to human relationship or group of people together to misunderstand, as we've already touched upon, and take conflict can be created unnecessarily sometimes because of that misunderstanding. So we talked about listening, and that's really important, and being witnessed. But I think so is being able to really understand our own experience, explain it to somebody, and sometimes be able to say, actually, I'm not quite sure what I'm feeling here. Can you explore this with me? And a word that comes up for me when you're doing this with other people is intimacy. And I think intimacy is probably one of the, maybe the more aloof and difficult experiences to share with another human being, authentic intimacy. And this is a really good opportunity to explore and grow that capability as well. So yeah, get yourself an emotions wheel is what I'm saying. There's one thing to take away from this podcast.
I'm curious where intimacy is on the wheel.
So,
or would that be an emotion? Not really.
It is a great shout. May not even be here.
Yeah, no, here, just thinking.
It's under happy, or intimate is.
You're right.
Intimacy, no, but it sits between playful, sensitive, and happy in that middle bit here.
So then there's even more layers underneath intimate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes, and again, you can go through this in as much detail, make as much sense of it as you like. Either side of intimate is optimistic and peaceful. And then you've got other emotions such as hopeful, loving, inspired, and open, which I think what a beautiful combination of feelings. Even just saying those words, they kind of elicit little glimmers within you if you really tune into it, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think if we think about why we're here, and what is it, anything and everything we do in some way, shape, or form is to experience emotions. And why limit ourselves to happy, sad, angry, afraid? You know, why not really kind of, you know, sometimes happy is fine. Just as, you know, sometimes, you know, a takeout burger is what you really need in that moment. But sometimes you really need that, you know, top steak or, you know, whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's room for all. But I think limiting us, our emotional experience, because we haven't got curious about how we feel inside, and to really get to know ourselves on that level is a really missed opportunity in the time that we have here. I really do.
Yeah, Josh and I have talked about that a lot. He read a book called Existential Kink. Is that what it was called, right? And it's about, I don't even want to call them like negative emotions, because what makes them negative? You know, if you, like one example was I had to cancel a breathwork session. I overbooked myself and I had to choose one over the other. And he was talking me through it because it was really causing me so much stress. And he's like, well, like, what would happen if you cancel that? I'm like, well, I would destroy, you know, something, you know, everyone's schedule is going to be destroyed because of me. And he's like, so what's that feeling? That like disappointment? Like, what if you actually want to feel? What if your body wants to experience that disappointment? Why don't you let it? And that's a hard one for a people pleaser to let yourself wreak havoc on something, even though, of course, that's not actually going to happen. They're going to understand that I can cancel something from once in a while. But like, just to, so he told me to listen to this recording, and I just let myself, I'm like, okay, I just ruined someone's day. I'm going to experience what that feels like and just let it be. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to label it as a bad feeling necessarily. So I agree. We came here to experience that whole rainbow of emotions on that wheel.
I think so. But how do, again, if you think about it, in our busy modern Western lives, how do we carve out time to learn this stuff? How do we take ourselves back to the school of self-discovery? You know, we,
that's the question.
Parents, and it's incredibly difficult. And I think that is something that is important to talk about early on with my clients. How are you going to create spaces in order to do this work, to get to know yourself on this level? Because it is easy to put all of this stuff to one side in the pursuit of the responsibilities that we have. And I think that's why, for me, so there are so many different ways to support you with this. So I don't have, for example, any notifications whatsoever on my phone other than an hourly affirmation. People that know me know well enough if they need to get hold of me, they can, but they damn well better go old fashioned and ring the phone.
I have those on my phone too. I even put, the way I organized my apps is each little section of apps, I have an affirmation underneath it. So like all my social apps is, I think I have it as I am connected. So I'm like, just to remind myself, I'm going onto this app to be connected, to not scroll, doom scroll for an hour. I'm going on to connect. And then like games, like little phone games, I have, I am joyful. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not playing this game just to distract myself. I'm playing this game because I want to have a little fun right now for 5 minutes or whatever. So I'm the same way. It's like we have to kind of hack ourselves into not let the devices be that doom that they really are, and use them properly, I guess, in a way.
I love that. I really do. And it's that bringing intentionality and realizing actually, if we choose to just take a pause and bring intentionality, even in the smallest of ways, as you described there, to our experience and the things that we choose to do, it's amazing what space that creates and what emotions we receive, we experience as a result. I was, as you were saying, as I was listening to you then, something came up for me that I heard recently with one of my clients only last week, where it was like, we went through that emotional experience, and without setting intentionality, gaming, it's like suddenly they've lost track of time. They've not even really lent into the joy, and they just feel guilt and shame having done that. It's like, oh, that's interesting. So being able to reframe our emotional experience through intention, suddenly we can start to feel like actually my emotional experiences aren't going to be dictated by what happens out there and just randomly. Because often we hear the phrase, if we're not careful, I will be happy when XYZ happens, or, that it's always unattainable. Whereas actually there are ways we can bring these emotional experiences to us and create them within us just through intentionality. And again, it's a practice which I am still learning to do. And I still catch myself in those moments of feeling guilt and shame. Don't think for a minute listening to this that I've got it nailed, because I really haven't.
Same here.
So Nick, with that in mind, I was thinking about as you were focused on that professional football career and this idea of achievement, so I was a pickleball. Have you heard of pickleball? Okay. No.
It's, no? Oh my it's, God. It's every, I haven't tried it yet, but all, okay. He's in Utah and I'm over here on the East Coast, and it's everywhere. It's a cult. So don't even let them tell
so
you.
So it's like tennis, but on a smaller court. And they use a plastic wiffle ball with smaller paddles instead of the big rackets.
Like so, ping pong mixed.
Yeah, like ping. Oh my God, I actually saw a couple of men playing this.
It's coming to you.
I had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's starting over there.
So it's everywhere here. And so I was a pickleball mindset coach, because there's tournaments here and people wanted that gold medal. And as I was diving into this understanding of this achievement hamster wheel that we can get on, I stopped. I couldn't coach them. I couldn't do it because of my values. And I was like, I will help you go inward to help you discover why you feel like you need to achieve. And we're going to talk about your childhood. And nobody signed up. Like, that was the And so I'd love to hear your experience, your understanding of this. So this innate driver of being a human to achieve, to better ourselves, to climb the highest mountain, to dream big and to go after these goals. How do you bridge that so that it's not from a wounded place, but from
Wow. So there's, I would probably defer in part to a gentleman called Paul Gilbert, who wrote a book called The Compassionate Mind and talks about our emotional systems. And he explains it in really simplistic, easily accessible ways that all of us have, our threat system, that fight or flight, freeze, fawn response to perceive danger. We have a drive system, which is what gets us out of bed every morning. It's our motivation that when it's working as it should, achievement is any one of a number of things, including, noble and exciting and it feels good. We also have an affiliative system, which is how we soothe ourselves, how we relax. And I think increasingly in the modern world, we tend to flip between threat and drive and threat and drive and threat and drive. And even when we think we're in affiliative, we're actually in drive. So how do you relax? Well, I relax by going to the gym. Well, is that relaxing? Like, I'm not saying exercise can't be good for you, far from it, but it's what intentionality again are you bringing to that process? So I think if achievement is a response to threat and even subconsciously to gain worth and self-worth, I think that's where it becomes something other than what I've just described. And potentially a little bit toxic because you're never going to get that self-worth no matter how many things you achieve. And I think that's actually seen in countless examples of very, very successful world-beating sports people or movie stars that struggle, even though they've achieved all of these things. And I think that example has been given to us time and time and time and time again. And I think that's why for me, understanding that these things are noble and they are part of why we're here, but why are we doing it? And why are we really doing it? And getting curious and being sure of our why is a really good yardstick, I think, to judge whether it's that healthy kind of striving or whether it's a threat-based self-worth inducing or even people-pleasing desire.
I
That's
just
where I am with it.
had the opportunity last week to teach to present to my local school system. So it was all the teachers. It was a professional day for them. And so I did it last year. And then this year, so many more people signed up. So I had three sessions. So totally like 150 people I got to speak to. And it was all teachers. So I could talk for a while about the experience, but the one thing that I said to them was, 'cause I told them, I'm like, I'm not here to train you to train your kids. Like, I don't want you to just, I know you probably don't have time to take 15 minutes every day to breathe with the kids, but I want to offer you different breath work, other aspects of breath work facilitation in the class. So I offered intention. And I said how important it is for to have like, I said, I know you have agendas of how to what you have to do during the day, but to take out the agenda of them, the example I used of if you want them all to get an A plus and that's your agenda is that they all need to succeed this way, they're not going to. And so I said instead, in just having the intention of them to be proud of themselves, for the students to be proud of the work that they do, and that ripple effect will then probably get them all to have an A. So that was like that. So that's how, kind of how I see that too. It's about just keeping that clear intention, not really about the outcome, but just what you want them to feel. If that makes
Oh,
sense.
yeah, look, it really does. Jess and I have begun to work with educational establishments and schools for very similar reasons. And schools as much as anything else, really. You know, the health profession is another one where perfectionism is the minimum standard almost. And perfectionism is a feeder of shame. You know, it's a shame response, and it's at the core of how, you know, these really important pillars of our society operate. You know, and we've got over in the UK, you know, burnt out heads of schools terrified of making a mistake.
Right,
It's
exactly.
how do you just that disconnect, that difference. It's a really, don't know, I don't even have the word, the language to really kind of express myself in terms of how big it is for me to even sort of, it's that example again of sort of what I mentioned earlier. It's almost so big it becomes overwhelming, and you think, oh my God, what are we going to do about this? And it's like, we do exactly what you described, Hannah, and what I'm doing over here, and no doubt what you're doing, Josh. We do what we can in our local environment and hope that ripple effect will create change on a bigger scale. And I think that's the only way I can ground myself with this stuff. Because, you know, wouldn't it be a beautiful world if what we were taught at school is to, well, how do we become a human being in line with, you know, what with best efforts we all do parentally? You know, it's a big challenge.
And I was very like I was nervous about doing it last year, but this year I was very excited to, because what I did was I shared my story about how in school I never felt seen. I felt invisible, and I remember if I tried too hard at something and failed, then why would I try hard again? So I was like your average C student, and I shared this to them, they really resonated with it. I had so many people reach out afterwards to say that just that story alone. So just back to what we were saying, like sharing your authenticity kind of just sparks something in people. They're like, well, I felt that same way when I was a kid, or my children seem to be feeling this way. And that's when those small changes could start happening.
I love that. How do you guys find that process of kind of shining your light is the phrase that I like, you know, that's that being vulnerable, sharing pieces of ourselves with the world. It's a journey, I think, in of itself. You know, when you get to the point of healing to think, I want to be of service, I want to make a difference, I want to share what I know and offer opportunities for people to do that. That moment kind of is almost like, wow, that brings up a lot of stuff inside you. You know, that's a
Exactly.
journey on its own.
I still can't listen to the podcast, or even when my fiance listen, like I posted something on Instagram yesterday with me speaking, and I can hear him listening to it in the other room. I'm like, I don't want to hear myself. So, but I'm still at the stage of just putting myself out there. I've found that I'm a little bit more comfortable just speaking. Like the me before 2019 would I would. If you told me I had a podcast, like, no way, I would never believe you. So I know that I've come leaps and bounds to where I am now, but I still can't listen to myself. So I know that there's always growth, right? But it is a journey of having that confidence and just and with the word that you like to use, right? And the three E's, the empowerment. Just be feeling fully in that, embodying that empowerment. It's hard, but we got to
Yes.
do it. Like that's what keeps me going, is that I have to do this. I have to, because it's not, I don't know how prominent breath work is where you are, but like Josh says, there's breath work on every corner in Utah, and the same with like California and that coast. Like it's nothing around here. And so that call is even stronger to me in my little neck of the woods. It's trying to create community when there isn't any. And I have to do it. And that's what keeps me going forward, even though it's terrifying.
Yeah, I always ask that with other people out there in the world doing this, because otherwise I think we can find ourselves moving towards that kind of shame-based approach of not showing our imperfections or not showing our own worries. And I think it then creates that kind of, you know, expert and client relationship that we see in more traditional therapies, where actually for me it's like, I'm really passionate about flipping that narrative of, look, there might be some stuff I know that I've learned through lived experience and through training, but this doesn't make me the finished article. And in fact, there is no such thing. And shortening that gap, and especially between practitioners, having that peer support approach to being open about that, I think is something which, pleasingly, certainly in the UK, I'm seeing more of than maybe when I first started out a couple of years back, that it's okay. You know, I don't want people to look at my content or read my testimonials and just think like, I'm never going to get to be where this guy is, or I'm never, you know, what's the point of that? Who wins right. from that? It might feed my ego. Like, and there's probably plenty of practitioners out there that maybe do unknowingly have that approach. But I think it's so important for us in this kind of space to be real, whatever that is for us, because I do believe that people that are right to work with me won't be the same people that are right to work with either of you, even though a lot of what we offer might be really similar. And even if there are people out there, as there no doubt are, that offer exactly what I offer, they will have a different flavor because of who they are. And if mm-hmm. none of us are showing up and showing people that, we're going to end up working with the wrong people and vice versa. That's exactly. why I think I'm so passionate about this point of embracing imperfection and embracing learning as an ongoing quest, and healing mm-hmm. as a prerequisite to just being part of a human being. You know, it's not a destination. There is no end point. And it's tough sometimes, but it's also the most meaningful, authentic, powerful, amazing thing that any of us can ever choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be both of those things at the same time.
Yeah. It's a gift in it within itself.
As I was learning NLP, there's a particular book, and I guess it's a modality within NLP, and it's called self-concept. And you can create attributes or characteristics and then plant them in your subconscious. And I was like, okay, so I just need to make this ideal list of what the perfect human will look like and then create from that. And then all my insides was revolting at that idea. It was like, but what about the humanness? And so inviting the messiness of being human, like that, it feels like that's where the intimacy lies. That's where the connection. Because if I can share my vulnerabilities and my weaknesses, and you understand those because you felt them too, there's a connection that forms just in that moment. So I had to throw NLP out again.
You can throw it out and it'll just come back to you eventually in some way, shape, or form, like a boomerang, Josh, you know,
yeah.
like most other things. I've really enjoyed this, guys. Honestly, like I'm feeling just so many amazing different glimmer emotions at the moment. My wheel is full.
Yay. That's perfect.
Real quick, I just wanted to, when you asked how we were showing up in the world, Nick, I was kind of thinking on that. And I feel like just a man talking about emotions is shifting the consciousness globally. Mm-hmm. That the more you and I speak about this, and that it's normal, that it's human, and to allow those walls to drop. Those masks, that we don't need those masks anymore, that once again, that messiness, that humanness exists because we have hearts, and that our hearts want to shine. We want to open these up and to really just, I keep bringing it back to making it normal that I have feelings and that I want to show them to other people. Because I know you have feelings too. So Yeah, it, and I've in the program. So Hannah and I met in a breathwork. So she was in the cohort before me, the 6 month program. And as I went through my program, there were 100 people in the program and four men. And so I chatted with the one of the mentors a few weeks ago, because it's been, I graduated in April, so it's been 9 months now. And so I was curious about the people coming through, if it was still that kind of that uneven ratio. And she said no, that a lot more men are signing up.
Good.
Yeah. And so it
Yeah, because
feels
we
like
only had like two.
two. Yeah. So it feels like there's this shift happening where men are starting to really understand there's more inside. It's not just all up here, that those emotions, and I love that wheel. I feel like there's such a richness if we can articulate it and feel it in our bodies. Like breathwork is so good at that. Hannah and I talked about longing, like the sensation of longing, and can you feel what it feels like to long? And without that human, without longing, can you imagine a life with no longing? But that longing can almost fit into the negative side of that wheel. But if you took it out, what would life, it wouldn't be the same.
Wouldn't have
Okay.
that chase.
I love that, Josh. And I think something that I would reflect back in response is that actually people often say that men find it difficult to experience their emotions and to talk about them. And I think that's not untrue. But in my experience, what I have found, especially over the last couple of years, is that actually it's more not so much that men can't or don't know how to, but they don't feel safe to. It comes back to that safety. And when they feel safe to, and that transition can happen really quite quickly, suddenly it becomes a different ball game. But you're quite right, there is an imbalance without a doubt. And I think, I'm proud to stand in my sensitivity and my emotions and to feel comfortable talking about them because it is part of what makes us human beings. And I think, by the way, it's the same in as much as, women and non-binary people as well. Men don't have the monopoly on the few emotions that they are comfortable as a, without wanting to generalize, like, anger and things like that. And I think it's important to recognize that as well. At the end of the day, all of us as human beings, however we identify, have the ability to experience just as naturally as anyone else the whole spectrum of emotions, in my humble opinion, and in my learning as it stands. So I think it's the more of us there are and the more safe spaces that I keep opening up, and there are more and more, I'm seeing literally spring up more so than ever year on year, the more excited I get that we may see some of these changes of normalization in our own lifetime, which is something that, going back to 2019, I probably couldn't have really envisioned. But I agree with you guys, and that's a really lovely way to kind of end, maybe, that if there's one thing that we can take from the catastrophes and the pain of the pandemic for met so many is, and all the other things that are going on in the world is this movement of hope and connection and possibility that is just as bright and as encompassing, if we choose to see the glimmers of it and be involved in it, than anything else that's going on that, isn't so tasteful in this world. That's a firm belief that no one's going to shake me from.
Nick, where can people find you?
So the best place to connect with me is on Instagram. So my handle is Nick Edgar Coaching, NickEdgar, all one word. You can connect with the 3E space as well, which is mine and Jess's wellness business, which is the underscore, the number three, the letter E underscore space, or www.the3espace.com. And please do connect as well, because sharing stories, DMs are always open. The more connected we are, the better off all of us are. And thank you so much for inviting me to have this discussion with you amazing people today. I've really enjoyed it.
What a great episode. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Let us know what you took from that. Leave some comments, share with a friend who also might resonate with the story. Subscribe, like, all those things so that we can spread the word about our podcast. And so all of our beautiful stories that we get to hear from our amazing guests get to be shared around the world. We appreciate you as a listener, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Deeper Awareness Podcast, where the journey of self-discovery and inner growth continues to unfold. We hope this episode has ignited a spark within you and inspired you to embrace a more conscious and authentic existence by looking within. If you enjoyed today's conversation, be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for upcoming episodes, where we'll continue to explore the transformative power of breathwork and emotional healing. Continue the conversation and stay connected with us on Instagram. Follow at Deeper Awareness Podcast to receive daily inspiration, valuable tips, and updates on our latest episodes and offerings. We'd love to hear your thoughts and insights from today's show, so feel free to share them in the comments below or tag us in your posts. Your engagement and feedback mean the world to us as we strive to continue to create content that resonates and empowers our incredible community. Together, we can continue exploring the depths of consciousness, fostering genuine connections, and supporting each other on our transformative journeys. This episode is brought to you by You Belong Breathwork, your destination for transformative healing and self-discovery. At You Belong Breathwork, we believe in the power of breath to unlock the deepest parts of ourselves, leading to profound insights and a greater sense of connection and belonging. Whether you're seeking emotional healing, a deeper connection with yourself, or a path to authenticity, our breathwork sessions, retreats, and coaching programs are designed to guide you on this transformative journey. Our experienced facilitators are here to hold space for you as you explore the depths of your consciousness and discover the infinite potential within. Visit youbelongbreathwork.com to explore our offerings and download a free guided breathwork session. Thank you for being a part of our deeper awareness community. Stay connected, stay curious, and may you embrace your true essence with love and compassion. Goodbye for now, and see you in the next episode.